doing the thing is where the courage comes from.
Welcome to the Inspiro Podcast, a podcast exploring personal growth, leadership, strategy, communication, and fulfillment. We are your hosts, Jason Luchterfeld and Bill Woodburn. I'm here as a dentist, transitioning into a career to help facilitate individuals and their organizations towards a more fulfilling future.
Hi there, I'm Bill Woodburn, and I'm a licensed professional counselor and licensed marriage and family therapist in Austin, Texas. I'm fascinated by the way people come together to solve problems, whether that's couples or families, dental practices or organizations. We're going to be exploring a lot of topics, and for us to be able to be free to do that, I have to let you know that this is not intended to be dental advice or counseling advice.
Like if you think about a home life or an office home, thinking about how do we help patients feel protected? How do we exude protection just in the way that we show up, the way that we speak to them, the way that the office is made? There's a lot of research about just having nature inside is really valuable. Painting, art of nature inside is really soothing and important. But so I say that just to say that there are ways that we can actually construct an office for someone to feel when they walk in protected and soothed. Attunement. So attunement is a cool word because it literally just means paying attention. But there is this thing that happens among people where I notice that you're not okay, but I don't say anything about it, or I pretend I don't notice in order to try to just keep things peaceful and calm. But consider the times in which you've been not okay and someone said, gosh, are you okay? You don't seem okay. And how, to me, that just takes me from a place of having to protect myself to feeling like I'm being seen and being protected. So when someone
that
actually
I'm gonna
cares.
Interrupt you for a second. That one goes both ways. And I think as a common topic for us here that Bill and I've covered a couple of times, because that's bi-directional. I don't want to ask if you're okay, because I can see that you're not, and I don't want to hear it. It's, I don't want to tell you that I feel bad, because culturally we've been conditioned to say I'm good. And so it's that feeds back into your idea of protection though, and having support. And if those are there, then I'm okay to say those things. And so that attunement piece, I think, is a really valuable one that, it, as you said, it goes way beyond just paying attention and all that. It really brings a lot of these factors together.
Yes.
And one of the devious little tricks we play on boys, bringing them up to be men, or at least certainly in my generation, what I call the John Wayne generation, is someone says, let's say you're not doing well because you're feeling kind of threatened and overloaded, and someone genuinely observes that you're not doing well and asks about it. And now you have this interesting decision, because in John Wayne culture, if I say I'm not okay, then I'm very vulnerable and that's weak. So I don't get to feel safer by answering, yes, I'm having a bad day, even though biologically, psychologically, I would feel better communicating.
Yeah.
But it's been trained to be the opposite.
Yeah, there's certainly a relationship that has to be established and a level of trust and protection that has to be established there. But I also just to argue a little bit, I do think that if I am uncomfortable, okay, so let's say that Bill, you asked me how I'm doing and I'm uncomfortable saying I'm not doing well, but you look genuinely interested in my real answer. And I say, actually, I'm not doing very well. And your response makes me glad that I said it. That's huge, right? That's really huge. And I have noticed, this is on a much lighter scale, but I have noticed just like, even when I'm at the grocery store and I'm walking through the checkout line and the checker, you know, is doing this and goes, how's it going? How's your day? If I go, you know, I'm okay. You know, so, you know, I had a hard morning, but I'm doing okay right now. And I really look at them. nine times out of 10, they stop what they're doing and they look back at me and they go, oh, good. And I say, how are you? And, you know, and so there is, I think, and I usually get a real answer from them when I do it like that. So I do think there's this fear of making people uncomfortable. And I get it. I fall subject to it all the time. But I think some of these things are self-fulfilling. Like, I can't say it, so I'm not going to say it, so I stay uncomfortable. If I do say it and it is received well, there's a lot of power in that. And then you and I have just made a connection and both of us feel a little bit better. And you can build on those. So, you know, I don't see my dentist that often, so I don't know what that would do. But if I were to see my dentist twice a year for 5 years or whatever, and every time we interacted, there was this real genuine thing that was going on, I would begin to feel protected and soothed and attuned to as I walked into that office every time. It would feel different. But there is some self-work that we have to do in order to show up in that way for other people. It's hard. It's not easy. It's not easy. And our, you know, we're not swimming in the waters of genuine and authentic expression right now. So you swim upstream when you do it, for sure.
So along those lines, back to something you said earlier about us being better off in small groups.
Mm.
And instead we're interacting on a daily basis with lots of strangers.
Yeah.
And oftentimes it's those strangers that are saying, hey, how are you? How's it going? You check in at the airport, you go to the grocery store. It's not the same checker you see every time. It's all this. And so it's a stranger asking you those questions, not somebody that you've formed a relationship with that you are comfortable actually responding. So we've kind of, with the size of our friends now, mm-hmm. we've created situations where we are almost just asking things to be polite more than we're asking things because we care, except for a small group of people that we call our close friends or close colleagues, et cetera. And those we're asking because we actually care.
Yeah. Yeah. And so then the challenge is, how do you turn the grocery store checker or the, you know, the guy at the door, how do you turn them into not a stranger, even for a brief moment?
Mm-hmm.
And, but you're right. I mean, we have, I feel like a lot of my like maturing process is like reckoning with my anger that we've created a world that's hard to live in. And so I do think, like I said before, I do think connection and relationship are our natural habitat. And so if we can remember that and attempt to find that, then we make these little interactions with strangers a little less trying and more fulfilling. They kind of tip into the positive side, you know, for us.
I'm going to try to bring a few more concepts together that you talked about.
Yeah.
So it's mindfulness, moon phases, and needles. So mindfulness, I think you talked about that. It's our awareness of the world around us and that we have more of an awareness of things than we realize. You talked about the subconscious sensing things constantly. This is something that I've learned a little bit about through a meditation app, a mindfulness meditation app. And many of the meditations are about realizing that our bodies, our brains, are just sensory receptors that are always on. You can't turn them off. And there's more of them than you can deal with. And so the brain filters them. And you can play with the filter consciously a bit, but you can't turn everything off. And so realizing that and coming to terms with that has some value in helping to calm yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That with the moon. So we used to use the moon as our guide. And the phases of the moon were something that you learned from a very young age and were incredibly valuable in knowing what was going on in the world. And now nobody knows what the moon phase is. And so that speaks to something you talked about, our connection with nature, our ability to interpret what's going on around us, and the fact that we have completely lost that, all except for the people on Naked and Fearful or whatever that TV show is. It's out there. And then the last thing is needles. And this goes to the filters that we have or don't have with all that we're being bombarded by. And it kind of brings technology into the mix, that technology was supposed to be something that was there and was going to help us filter all the information, give us access to all this stuff and help us filter it. And instead, it's created access to so many more things that we could say we have a filter failure, or we could say that what's happened is, rather than us looking for a needle in a haystack, all we have is a giant pile of needles and we don't know which one to pick. And that creates overwhelm, stress. We feel out of control. And so the solution, I think, is also still wrapped up in your five things. It's being more attuned with what's going on and making choices or priorities around what is of value to us, and putting time and energy into those things instead of everything.
Everything, right.
So that's my trying to bring some of the things you talked about earlier into some other concepts that I think are related.
You know what you made me think of as you said all that was the concept of belonging. And we talked, you know, talking about home and family and safety, belonging is a through thread there. And you, when you talk about mindfulness and moon phases and what to pay attention to, you know, for me personally, paying attention to the seasons and the moon and the weather and what's going on outside has been a huge piece of me feeling calmer and more like I belong here on this earth. And one of the reasons that I shifted my private practice to a lot of outdoor experiences is because what I felt like I was coming into contact with over and over and over again were people who were incredibly distressed by their sense that they didn't belong here on this earth, that they didn't understand their place here. And I kept bumping into these people who were like, what am I doing here? And what's my role? And what does it all mean? And I thought, have you sat under a tree lately? Because that's where I figure it out. And so I do think little practices like mindfulness or following the moon or, you know, honoring the season is a huge piece of us getting back to what we're built for, which is an attunement to self. And it really, I think, supports us feeling like we belong and have a home. And I would argue that a lot of our ills that we have currently created for ourselves is from this decision we made that we don't belong here. You know, when you think about climate change, you think about the modern, the way that we've built cities and the modern way that we exist from moment to moment. I feel like a lot of that is in some sort of denial that actually we belong outside, focusing on food and family and rest and connection and sustenance. So I agree with you. And when you said needles, my first mind went to, I hate needles. and so many people, there's so many people, and you know, this is not a unique fear. And one of the things that happened in my life is that I had trouble having children. And in order to have my two daughters, I had to go through IVF. And the number of injections that I have endured in the last 7 years, I can't even count. Boxes and boxes and boxes of needle, you know, those sharps containers. I hate needles. But by the end of it, by the time I was pregnant with my second daughter, I was giving myself intramuscular injections daily with an incredibly uncomfortable solution. And I just feel like we have so many fears that only experience can help us with, you know? Bill and I talk a lot about courage and feeling like the protagonist of your own story. And I think no matter how many stories there are out there, we still feel like we're supposed to have the courage before we do the thing. And I really feel like the doing the thing is where the courage comes from. And to me, I think there's a lot of distress in the world right now that comes from abstaining from doing, abstaining from engagement, abstaining from participation. And then it's an anxiety about what it might be, what it might be like. And to me, like, the only cure for so many fears is experience. And I think experience is also where you learn to filter and find what you value.
I use a quote a lot in when I teach, it's hope is the consequence of action. And I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
And so my question to you, to me, that sounds obvious that experience is the path, but you're saying it like I'm interpreting what you're saying. You're saying it with a tone that's not common knowledge.
Yeah. What I see in our young people today feels like that's a wisdom that they're not receiving. I think so, when we believe that our lives can be conducted online, I think that's counter to the idea that experience is the path.
So they're taught to create an avatar rather than live a life.
Yeah. I mean, have you guys, so I'm not super media savvy because I'm raising young children and I only have so much capacity, and media is not a huge part of that for me. But I have an Instagram account, I have Facebook, but have you heard how frequently people talk about their brand as an individual, like being on brand?
Yeah.
And they're not talking about the thing that they're selling. They're talking about who they are as a person. And so I think avatar is exactly the right word, that they're sending out a front, they're projecting an image. And I think it is getting in the way of experience. And unfortunately, to me, that creates a lot of fear and that creates a lot of hopelessness.
It's interesting. So I could, it creates fear, but it's partially being done, I think, as a protective mechanism. Like they're trying to protect themselves from being hurt. But what I hear you say is that it's also creating more fear.
It's like fear begets fear.
Okay.
I think.
Interesting. I think
we all are afraid. We're all afraid of being hurt. We're all afraid of being rejected. That is human nature. And I think when you are afraid of being hurt and you're afraid of being rejected, and then you choose to abstain from relationship in order to protect yourself from those two things, then the fear of hurt and rejection just grow. They become like a elephant on your back or monkey on your back or whatever the image is, you know.
I just learned of a term this week that might fit here. You two can tell me. Masking.
Mm-hmm.
So we provide a form of us to the world based on who we're interacting with that we think they want to see. Is that roughly accurate? And is that related to what you're saying also, like with creating an avatar and a brand? And is that a form of the same thing, or is it?
Well, yeah, I think it is. I think there are levels, right? It's all on a spectrum. Because I think there is a socially appropriate form of attuning to another and understanding what it is they need from you and finding how those two things fit together, how what I need and you need go together. That's a dance, and it's a very gray area that I think a lot of people, it takes a lifetime to learn. And then there is the the step of like, when I am with you or when I am talking with you, I hide part of myself in order to be more acceptable to you, or my perception of what you need to be more acceptable to that. And that starts to be a problem, I think. And I do think that's what they mean when they're talking about masking. And then I think this idea of like avatar or brand is taking it to the extreme, because now I'm putting it out to hundreds of thousands of people who don't know me at all. And so I think it's maybe about scale, perhaps, the extent to which we do it.
And to bring that together, you know, so many of us have these moments of worrying that we're not enough, not good enough, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's very tempting to say, that means I shouldn't engage in this relationship or this experience until I can do it right and until I feel safe. And so there's this idea that I will mask it until somehow I am perfect enough and brave enough, and then I'll do it. But of course, we never get to that spot because we're always waiting for enough, and it really doesn't come.
Yeah. So there's a concept that maybe, so I'm aware that we have 5 minutes left. This may be a good place for us to stop for today. There's this concept that I think encapsulates what we're talking about, which is the window of tolerance. So when you think about my comfort zone, or when I think about my comfort zone, if I stay within my comfort zone all the time, I'm never uncomfortable, but I also don't grow. I don't change. I don't engage with the world. I don't go out there. But if I go too far outside of my comfort zone, I've blown through my window of tolerance, then I am dysregulated and disconnected and overwhelmed. And that doesn't feel good either. And is and can be traumatizing, can be impactful in a really negative way. So the dance, I think, as we grow and develop as human beings in relationship, in our profession, with our own internal lives, is that the idea is to dance at the edge of the window of tolerance. So like if I've got, you know, if I imagine a circle being my window of tolerance, if I stay within it all the time, I don't grow. If I go outside of it too frequently, then I'm a mess. But if I push up against the edges in manageable, so eustress is the word, right? Manageable stress. If I push up against that edge, I start to stretch and my window of tolerance starts to grow. And so I would argue that that is what is necessary. And that's where this attunement piece comes in. That's so important, because I don't know where my edge is unless I'm paying attention to myself. And I don't know where somebody else's edge is unless they're paying attention to themselves and we're paying attention to each other. And they're, you know, full circle. It's a beautiful aspect of working with horses, because horses have a very physical bubble. And if you move into their bubble, they move away from you. But if you dance at the edge of if you're too far outside their bubble, they don't notice you. If you come in too close, they move away from you. But if you dance on the edge of their bubble, then you guys start to have a conversation. And so there is this like really concrete experience of that edge that you move in and out of, you know, come into your comfort zone and regulate, and then move out and stretch, and then come into your comfort zone and regulate and move out and stretch. And that's where growth happens. That's where change happens.
I think people have that too.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Bill and I like to do this exercise where we get people standing across from each other in a room, and they get closer and closer and further and further to feel what it's like. Yeah. It's fun.
It's fun to do that at cocktail parties. So, Kate, that was awesome. I think that I agree that that's a great place to put some wrapping paper on this gift of a conversation. And really enjoyed that. And I have a list of things for the next time, whenever that might be. Thank you so much.
That sounds great. I'd love to. Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Kate. Marvelous as always.
Thank you so much. It was fun.
A lot to digest there in 3 episodes with the amazing Kate Naylor. If needed, give us some feedback. InspiroPodcast@gmail.com. Always open for you. And stay tuned. Probably going to be a week or two off, and then we'll be back at you with more fresh content.